Do you prefer to watch the evening news with Katie Couric on CBS, or maybe Charlie Gibson on ABC, or is Brian Williams on NBC your guy? How about none of the above? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We'll welcome your preferences for your evening news consumption and why, or maybe your questions for our guest this hour, who has written a new book examining the behind-the-scenes battle going on inside and among the big three networks for the remaining audience share for the evening news. You may know Howard Kurtz as the media reporter for The Washington Post, or as the host of CNN's media watchdog program, Reliable Sources. He is also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Spin Cycle, and his new book is Reality Show, Inside the Last Great Television News War. And Howard Kurtz joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I had to laugh when I read in your book about how you grew up with the black and white TV, no remote, only had three or four channels. I don't like thinking that that was that long ago, but it, I guess, was. Things have really changed, haven't they?
You know, it seemed fine at the time, but younger people today would look at it as such a deprived existence, about one cut above living in a cave.
Right.
Because now, of course, you know, not only does everybody have multiple color TVs, or at least one, I guess, but, you know, they've got iPods and cable TV, and they can check the news instantaneously on any website or blog. I mean, we are just living in an age of multimedia instantaneous information. So what does that do to these evening newscasts, which seemed like such a prominent part of our lives in the era of Cronkite? That's what I set out to uncover in this book, Go Behind the Scenes, Charlie, Katie, Brian, as the new generation of anchors, not only battling each other, not only struggling to cover such difficult topics as the Iraq War, but also trying to save their franchises.
Right. How much has the evening news audience declined over the years?
Well, it's pretty dramatic. If you look at just the last 25 years, it's declined by more than half, which is understandable because even in the early 1980s, when Dan, Tom, and Peter took over, you still, cable TV was in its infancy. There was no internet to speak of, and so, you know, they had much more of a monopoly on news and information than we see today. But even in its somewhat reduced state, a lot of people, you know, tend to blow off these programs as being kind of dinosaurs. We're still talking about 25 million viewers who watch the combined viewership for all three, and that gives them the biggest media megaphone in town, and why I argue that the decisions they make, the way they decide what's news, what's not news, what goes at the top of the broadcast, really still has a huge impact on society, culture, and everything else in the media.
Can you give put that 25 million combined audience in perspective? What say does CNN or one of the cable news programs get around that same time?
That's a great question, because a lot of people think, well, you know, I get my news from cable, and that's clearly as important as the network evening news. You know, an audience of a million is considered very successful on cable television. The most popular cable news show is Bill O'Reilly's. He gets an audience of about 2 million. Mm-hmm. That compares to, let's, for example, take Katie Couric. She's in third place in the evening news wars, and we can talk about that if you like. So everyone says, oh, she's a loser, she's behind, nobody's watching her. She's got 5.5 to 6 million people watching, and she's in last place. So cable, for all its importance, as it's become kind of a national wire service, is drawing a fraction of the eyeballs.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about Katie Couric. Yeah, a lot of people say that she's just not working out. CBS was in third place before she came on board, too, right?
That is right. But on the other hand, CBS, I talk about in great detail in Reality Show how Les Moonves, who runs CBS, conducted the seduction of Katie Couric to get her to make that leap from NBC's Today Show, paying her $75 million over 5 years. I mean, look, there were great expectations for her. There was a huge publicity rollout. And then she immediately went south. And the reason, there are multiple reasons for this, but she made, and her team made, a lot of mistakes. They made too many changes too fast. They put too much fluff on that newscast that alienated the core audience. They missed or minimized major stories that were getting big play on the other networks. And the people who watched over the years, who watched Dan Rather, who watched Bob Schieffer during his year and a half in the chair, felt like they weren't really getting a full meal. So what happened is that after about 6 months and declining ratings, CBS slammed on the brakes, replaced the executive producer, and moved back to a more traditional hard news format. I think it's a better newscast now with Katie Couric, but the problem is it's such a tightly constricted format that she can't really show much of her personality, which made her so popular in the morning, and so she continues to run a distant third.
Yeah, that was her strength. So it's not just that a lot of people miss Bob Schieffer. It's not because we want an older guy giving us the news.
Well, I wouldn't completely discount that as a factor, because Schieffer, to everybody's surprise, he originally was supposed to do the news for a month or two, ended up there for a year and a half, and got the ratings up. When he left, and even given the mistakes that Katie Couric made, around the same time of Couric, with one zillionth of publicity, comes Charlie Gibson, the all-reliable guy from Good Morning America, goes into the evening news chair at ABC, and he's now number one. Now, there's a number of reasons for that as well, but I think a factor that's often overlooked is Charlie Gibson is 63 years old. He is closest in age to the average viewer who watches nightly news. It's a loyal but older audience, and so I think he got some of the Schieffer vote, so to speak, whereas Katie just turned 50 and Brian Williams is in his late 40s.
Yeah, did ABC, though, talk a little bit about how Charlie Gibson ended up there. He wasn't the first choice.
No, not by a long shot, and I spent a lot of time in reality show documenting this very messy process, because Gibson never thought he would be the evening news anchor, because everyone thought that Peter Jennings would be there forever. Mm-hmm. After Jennings died, ABC passed him over to go with a younger team, Bob Woodruff and Elizabeth Vargas. 3 weeks into that experiment, Woodruff was badly injured by a roadside bomb in Iraq, and happily has now mostly recovered. Elizabeth Vargas got pregnant, and about 5 months into her tenure, now she's the solo anchor, which wasn't the original plan. Ratings are not good, a lot of internal sniping, and they went out and told the story publicly that, well, she wants to spend more time with her baby, and so she's voluntarily stepping down. That's not what happened. What happened was Elizabeth Vargas was forced out, and Charlie Gibson was installed in that chair because it just wasn't working in the view of ABC executives. She agonized over this. She, even though, she had one child at home and the baby on the way, she wanted to keep that job. But Gibson comes in, and, I think because he's very easy to watch, kind of a calming presence, and because he'd been a Capitol Hill reporter for 10 years, and so he spoke with a certain authority about politics, slowly begins this climb and not only passes Katie, but overtakes Brian Williams for the number one spot.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk a little bit about NBC, too. Well, Brian Williams, he was the heir apparent for quite some time, yeah.
He was the heir apparent, it seemed like forever. In fact, he got kind of frustrated by that, and a couple of other networks were courting him. There was talk that maybe he would succeed. There were meetings about whether he would succeed Ted Koppel at Nightline or be given Dan Rather's job at CBS, where he started his career. But anyway, NBC announces 2.5 years in advance that he's going to succeed Tom Brokaw. He gets the chair, he inherits the number one audience, and he holds the number one audience, and he particularly makes a favorable impression on just about everybody when he went down and covered Hurricane Katrina in an exemplary fashion and won a lot of awards for that. The thing that frustrates people at NBC is that anyone who knows Brian Williams knows he's one of the funniest guys in the business. Just a terrific sense of humor. But at 6:30, you see a very sort of formal, traditional newsman standing up there tossing to the pieces. So there's been some pressure to get him to kind of loosen up. And so I talk about in the book how last year he did a skit on Saturday Night Live. And he was so nervous about that his shirt was just dripping. And there's a guy who's on TV all the time. He was afraid he was going to be a flop in front of the audience. And now, on November 3rd, after turning it down last season, Brian Williams is going to be the host of Saturday Night Live. And, the traditionalists are going to say, oh, my God, Walter Cronkite would never have done that. I think it's fine. He's a funny guy. Let him show that he can have some fun on Saturday night, come back and anchor the news on Monday evening. And the question is whether he feels comfortable showing a little more of his personality on the news, and whether that would help.
Let me get a couple of callers in before our news break. Tim in Sparta. Hi, Tim, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. I watch the Fox News Channel. They're the ones that I watch, and I primarily watch them because it's my belief that the other network channels, there's a huge liberal bias, and the Fox News Channel is fair and balanced. They have both sides. They consistently show both sides of an issue. They don't have the scandals like Rathergate. They don't have X's popping up on a conservative candidate or a liberal candidate. They don't have where they enlarge, during the they enlarge Al Gore on CNN. They enlarge Al Gore. and kept President Bush real small during their debate in 2000.
Too many examples here for us to go over before our news break. The network news are liberally biased. The three networks and Fox is fair and balanced. Howard Kurtz.
Well, look, certainly Fox News filled a niche for a lot of conservatives in the audience who felt they did not like what they were seeing on the network newscast. I would argue with the caller's contention that they are massively liberally biased. In fact, this is one quick example. Katie Couric, who's often seen as the most left-wing of the three anchors, went to Iraq last month, which was a brave thing to do, and she spent time with General Petraeus. I talk a lot about the coverage of the war in this book. And she reported from Iraq that there was modest progress being made in some areas. For that, MoveOn.org jumped all over her and said that she was parroting Bush talking points. So I do find some instances in which the newscasts were unfair to President Bush, but I also think they played a very important role in showing the country what was going on in the war in Iraq at a time when the administration said everything was going fine or at least much better. And that, to me, is not liberal bias. That, to me, is tough reporting.
Now, what about, Tim called it Rathergate, but talk about the information you reveal in the book about Dan Rather and his attempts to get that story about President Bush and his National Guard service on 60 Minutes.
Well, Tim is right that was a hugely damaging story to CBS, and I actually covered it at the time. You know, for Dan Rather, for all he had accomplished in his long and sometimes controversial career, to risk blowing up that career by rushing onto the air with that 60 Minutes 2 story based on some supposed National Guard memos that have been thoroughly discredited, that he did not authenticate. To this day, it is hard for me to understand how he did that. What I report in the book is that, despite what Rather is saying now about he didn't make the final decision and so forth, 2 days before that story aired, Rather was on the set of the CBS Evening News, half hour before airtime. He calls the executive producer of 60 Minutes 2 and said, "We've got to start promoting this story." And when the producer says, "Well, we haven't got it nailed down yet, Dan," Rather threatened to leak some of these memos to the New York Times so he could, quote, get our hooks into this story and so that CBS would get some credit for it. Well, what happened was CBS did air the story. He didn't have to leak the documents to the New York Times. The story was thoroughly discredited. Rather spent 12 days defending the story even after it had fallen apart, including on the phone with me. Finally apologized. Now he says he's suing CBS. He says that the apology was forced. He didn't really believe it. He still believes the story. It's hard for even Rather's friends to understand why he is doing this and why he feels like he needs to remind America of this most damaging episode in his career.
We will check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the network evening news with Howard Kurtz coming up after this check of the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Thursday morning, October the 18th. Happy to have you with us and invite you to join in as we talk with Howard Kurtz. He is author of the new book, Reality Show, Inside the Last Great Television News War. Howard Kurtz, you may know as media writer or reporter for The Washington Post and the host of CNN's Reliable Sources program, a media criticism program. We invite you to call in to talk with him about the evening news, the network news, where Katie Couric is battling Charlie Gibson, who is battling Brian Williams for the share of the audience that maybe you're in. Are you watching any of these three major network news programs regularly? Which one and why? Or are you saying more often than not these days, none of the above? 1-800-642-1234, our number to call in, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And please include your first name and your community with your email. Howard Kurtz, we heard from Tim in Sparta before our newscast, who thought that all of the major networks, the ABC, CBS, and NBC, were liberally biased, and so he was a Fox News watcher, and we talked a little bit about that. One of the examples that he brought up that I wanted to talk to you about, I'm not familiar with it. He said Fox would never do what CNN did, where they enlarged a picture of Al Gore and minimized a picture of President Bush to somehow make one look better than the other. Are you familiar with that scandal?
I've heard a lot of things. I've never heard that one. It sounds like something that was taken from some blog that likes Fox and doesn't like CNN.
Yeah.
I don't minimize the importance of Fox News, and I understand. I mean, the polls show, for example, how much less confidence conservatives have in the network evening news and in the establishment media in general. Katie Couric, 65% of Democrats think she's doing a good job, 36% of Republicans, and there are similar but smaller gaps for the other anchors. And I address this question in the book, but I don't think, I mean, your caller was obviously a very committed Fox News watcher who doesn't have any use for ABC, CBS, or NBC. I do think a lot of this polarization about which outlet you watch is driven by the country's division over the president and the Iraq war. And I talk about in the book the incredible pressure that the administration placed on the network news operations over the coverage of Iraq, although I think that time and history has vindicated the correspondents and the anchors who very plainly demonstrated in 2005 and 2006 that things were not going well over there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as pressure, you know, it's fascinating. Katie Couric was frozen out by the Bush White House for 5 years. Interestingly enough, not because of Iraq, but because on the eve of Bush's inauguration, she had an interview with Laura Bush, and they talked about a number of things, but Couric pressed her about her views on abortion. And the president and the White House team were so furious about this, they thought it should just be a nice, soft interview with the incoming First Lady, that Katie Couric couldn't get near the White House for 5 years. When she finally jumped to CBS, Dan Bartlett, the White House counselor, went to the president and said, "I know you're not going to like this, but she's one of the three anchors now. We've got to do business with her." And she since has had an audience with the president.
Mm-hmm. Talk about NBC and the decision to label the war in Iraq a civil war.
This happened last fall, and you know, I think it was NBC's attempt to have a sort of a Cronkite moment. By that I mean mm-hmm. the famous incident during Vietnam when Walter Cronkite went over to Vietnam for a week or so, came back, did a long broadcast about it, concluded that at best it was a stalemate. And Lyndon Johnson famously is said to have remarked, "If I've lost Cronkite, I've lost America." By the time that NBC did this, the support for the war had really dwindled, you know, close to two-thirds of the public now being against the conflict. But there was a great debate started by Robert Wright, who ran the network. Brian Williams was involved. Jeff Zucker, who was the head of television operations at the time, he was involved. And they basically said, look, is this a civil war or not? And if it is, why don't we start using that phrase? The administration had strongly resisted that description. Finally, they decided they would officially adopt, as NBC preferred usage, civil war, and they made a big deal about it with Matt Lauer on the Today Show. I think they kind of hyped it up a bit too much, but I don't think anybody today would seriously dispute that sectarian violence is, you know, a very significant part of the problem there.
Back to the phones. Carol in Chippewa Falls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I would just like to comment first, I'm 66, so mm-hmm. I grew up with Walter Cronkite, and now I get my news from NPR on the radio during the day, and then in the evening I watch Keith Olbermann on my DVR so I can skip through the commercials, and then I top off the day with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. So I've come a long way, too.
Interesting that you should mention Jon Stewart, because I have a chapter on him in this
Good.
Book. And, you know, look, one of the funniest guys on television. In fact, I was on The Daily Show last week talking about this book. I believe he's having an impact on the evening news. Well, an impact on the evening newscast, these staged traditional broadcasts. Not that they're doing fake news. I don't think we want to go there.
No, I don't think so.
But they've been playing Daily Show clips on both NBC Nightly News and CBS Evening News, and they've been stealing, or maybe they would say borrowing, Stewart's tactic of using videotape to kind of illustrate the absurdity of politics. So when a politician is saying the same thing over and over and over again, it doesn't deviate from the talking points. Remember when Hillary Clinton went all five Sunday shows a couple weeks ago, and every time she got asked a reasonably tough question, she would
oh, that's
start
right.
laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Daily Show did a great bit about that, and that's one of the things that Katie Couric replayed. So John started that story.
Well, I've been gone for, believe it or not, a whole month, and I was lucky I was on a trip, and I haven't had any politic news, and it's going to be fun to jump back in again.
Well, thanks for calling in. Howard Kurtz, here we have a 66-year-old woman saying that she's not watching Katie Couric, she's watching Jon Stewart. Does she buck a trend that's going on?
Well, it's certainly not true that not all older people watch the evening news, but what is true is that very few younger people watch the network newscast. And this is where I think they're committing slow suicide. You know, they've still got, as I mentioned earlier, this nice chunk of the audience, but it's a very aging chunk. And you can tell, not just from watching their commercials, but watching the news content, when they get to the second half of these programs, it's just endless stories about back pain and hormone replacement and the hip operations and all of that, you know, and they don't really give people under 30 or even under 40 in some cases much reason to watch. And obviously, some of that older audience is going to go off to the great television watching couch in the sky. And so I think that these newscasts, if they're going to survive, and that's very much an open question, I would say at this point, need to do more on the internet. Brian Williams, for example, blogs every day, which is probably a step in the right direction. Need to try to appeal more to younger people, need to do more original reporting and take some chances. I mean, I think it's become very predictable. I go through in the book how much influence a handful of newspapers, particularly the New York Times, has on what's on these newscasts. One very brief example, New York Times did just a feature story about a guy who recovered a car, a Corvette, that was stolen from him in 1969. That story was on all three network newscasts that night, and that happens again and again. And so I do think if they don't get the average age down, then in 5 years we may be having a very different conversation.
Let me take another caller. Glenn in Lake Zurich. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I did have one question, and listening to your conversation, it prompted another. I watch Brian Williams, and the reason I watch Brian Williams is because Katie seems to be trying too hard, and the gentleman on ABC, I just can't remember his name now.
Charlie Gibson.
He seems like he's shouting at me sometimes. I think that the question I have is the impact of the internet for those people like are 30 to 45 years old. I read a great deal of my news on my lunch hour at work, and I'm wondering how many of those people at that age are just watching or looking at news at work on the internet. So by the time they get home, they figure they know everything that's already going to be said on the news, so they don't take the time to look at it.
But this is exactly the challenge that the newscasts are facing, and I've sat in meetings with these anchors and producers, and they know full well that people are looking at the headlines on their computers at work, and they are maybe have cable TV on in the background. So what they're dedicated to doing is, A, to give busy people a kind of a summary of the news that cuts through a lot of the shouting that we hear on cable chat shows, for example. But secondly, that, you know, kind of puts it in perspective, sometimes with longer pieces. And that is a difficult thing to do. Sometimes these newscasts still break news. And the classic example that I go through in reality show is ABC's Brian Ross getting a hold of one email, a single suggestive email from Congressman Mark Foley to a 16-year-old House page suggesting he sent a picture of himself. And the kid said this was 66666. So Ross took this to Charlie Gibson, the anchor. And Gibson looked at it, and it was just one email at that time, and he said, you know, I don't think this story is strong enough to go on world news. So what happened is that Brian Ross broke the story online instead, and the next day Congressman Foley resigned, and there was a huge scandal, of course, of all the other emails and instant messages came out. It shows you how important the anchors are in making these deadline judgments, but it also shows you how important the internet is, because 10 years ago, if it didn't, that story didn't get on TV, it might never have seen the light of day.
Howard Kurtz, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Very interesting.
Well, thank you so much.
Howard Kurtz, author of Reality Show Inside the Last Great Television News War. Howard Kurtz, media reporter for The Washington Post and host of CNN's Reliable Sources as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, October the 18th. Coming up after 7 o'clock, join in as we talk with Congressman Dave Obie. We'll talk about some current issues before Congress, and we'll talk about his autobiography, Raising Hell for Justice, The Washington Battles of a Heartland Progressive. Dave Obie joining you after 7 o'clock. Joining me right now is Wisconsin Public Radio's Assistant Director of Talk Programming, Cheryl Gasser. And Cheryl, we have some work cut out for us this hour.
We do. We have a goal of $2,000 to raise in the next 12 minutes, and we have $120 so far raised this hour. Thank you very much to that member, to that contributor, but obviously a long way to go to reach our goal. And these hourly goals are important because We've been able to raise $2,000 in the past at this time of the morning, and we want to reach our overall goal. We do it hour by hour, pledge by pledge. So please step up to the plate, support the public radio programs that you enjoy. You're, of course, listening to Joy right now. You love her. You wake up with her each morning, but I bet you listen throughout the day. I bet you listen on the weekends. If you're like me, you wake up in the middle of the night and you turn on BBC overnight. We're here for you 24 hours a day, and you can pledge online at WPR.org or with a volunteer waiting to take your call, 800-383-9772.
You might want to consider the $120 level, as one new member has decided this hour. That's $10 a month or more, and we will send you, as our way of thanking you for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, we'll send you the member benefit card, which you can use at the restaurants that are participating in this, some 250 restaurants around the state and neighboring states, that will give you two-for-one entrees when you present the card. There are other benefits, including new this fall, two nights for the price of one at some really nice bed and breakfasts. It's something that if you like to eat and like to travel around the state and like to go to cultural attractions, you'll really get a lot of use out of the member benefit card. Yours for a pledge of $10 a month or more, the $120 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
You just got a behind-the-scenes look at the network news with Howard Kurtz, and you learn something new every day on public radio because you think about things in a different way, because you're exposed to things you wouldn't otherwise be exposed to, because we give you the chance to make up your own mind on the issues of the day, and because we're your news source. We're certainly one of your news sources, and we hear from listeners, Joy, who say we're their primary news source. News and information, entertainment, you get it all here on the Ideas Network, and that is possible only because of listener support. We need to hear from you now. Please go to the phone, 800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Lots of folks who pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, like Tom in Chippewa Falls, who says he is a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio because Wisconsin Public Radio presents a more intelligent dialogue of issues than what typically is available through the mass media. Well, thank you very much, Tom. Glad you appreciate the issue discussion that you hear here on the Ideas Network. What about you? Are you willing to help support a service like Wisconsin Public Radio that depends on listener contributions to help pay the bills? Never mind that. That was just an easel falling over. 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Take a minute and think about where you get your news and information. Many of us have magazine and newspaper subscriptions. We might watch cable, turn to the internet, and all of those things cost money. But I bet you don't get as much information from those sources as you do from Wisconsin Public Radio on the whole. And we bring you not only hourly news reports from NPR, but Joy's guests on news and media guests with a variety of information for you. What is Wisconsin Public Radio worth to you? It's completely up to you. There's no minimum, no maximum. It's the important thing is that you make that step and become a member. We have a goal this hour of $2,000, and Joy and I certainly want to do our part to convince you to help raise that $2,000 this hour. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Your pledge supports the programming. We don't have a lot of, little prizes and gimmicks. We're not offering a book this hour, but just the information that you get every single day on the Ideas Network. I take that back. You can pledge $120, and we will give you the member benefit card, so you can use that. Also at that level, we'll send you the Wisconsin Public Radio water bottle, which is sitting right in front of me. That's the gift for a $100 pledge. But I hope you're pledging to Wisconsin Public Radio not for a gift, but for the knowledge knowledge and the satisfaction of knowing that you are supporting an important service, an important asset of Wisconsin, that being Wisconsin Public Radio, listener-supported radio, non-commercial radio, 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Because you appreciate the intelligent discussion, the intelligent talk that you hear on Joy's program. 15 hours a week, she's here for you. You wake up with her in the morning, and you learn so much from her and from her guests, from the callers who join in. It really is a team effort. Joy and Karen Prager, Leo Duran, Carmen Jackson put this show together for you. The guests volunteer, donate their time, so to speak, and callers call in with their wonderful questions. We hear from our guests all the time, Joy, that our listeners are the smartest, the smartest around. And it really is a wonderful team. And members are a huge part of that team. With your support, we can continue going strong. We want to hear from you during this hour. 1-800-383-9772 or online at WPR.org.
Thanks to Lois in Madison, who's called in a pledge, saying this is the only station she listens to. Well, thank you very much, Lois, for pledging to Wisconsin Public Radio. Marion Portage pledged support because she says, I'm addicted. Well, we will support that addiction, listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. If you, too, listen a lot to Wisconsin Public Radio, or even if you just listen when you can but find it a valuable resource, pledge whatever amount is right for you. We have pledges of $20 and we have pledges of $2,000 and beyond. You can decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can put it on a credit card. You can pay for it all at once with a check. You can have it broken down monthly if you'd like to be doing monthly installments. You decide. $10 a month or more, and the member benefit card is yours. 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772.
Whatever amount is comfortable for you, that's what we're asking you for. There is no set level. As Joy said, we receive gifts of all amounts, and they're all important. Any amount makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. We do, though, this hour have a goal of $2,000, and we certainly want to meet that goal. Every hourly goal is important toward making the overall goal. And we have $410 so far this hour. Thank you so much. We've heard from three new members, which is wonderful.
That's
love
excellent.
To hear from new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. But maybe it's time to renew your membership if you pledged this time last year. Why not call in now and re-up? 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. It just takes a few minutes either way, 2 to 3 minutes of your day, and you've done your part to help keep public radio going strong.
What will we use your pledge for? Well, lots of things. 31% of Wisconsin Public Radio's budget comes from listener contributions, and your pledge might help pay for the NPR newscast, the fee that we need to pay NPR to carry NPR news. Maybe part of your contribution will pay for the telephone bill, which allows you to call in and participate in the talk shows. Or maybe pay for the telephone bill that it requires for us to call guests like Howard Kurtz, who you heard from this hour, and locate these great guests and have them join us by telephone from all over the world. This is the telephone number that we want you to call right now to help chip in for all of these costs. 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772. Or you can go online, WPR.org.
And if there were 10 people out there listening right now who wanted to pledge at the $10 a month level, we would make our goal. Certainly a dollar a day is within the budget of many people. Whatever amount is comfortable for you, 1-800-383-9772, WPR.org is the website. You can pledge online. It's safe and secure, and you can see the wonderful Made in the USA 36-ounce water bottle for Wisconsin Public Radio. Yours for a pledge of $100 a year or more. But again, pledge at the $10 a month level and receive the member benefit card, 2-for-1 entrees, 2 nights for the price of 1 at bed and breakfasts. Lots of ways to say thank you to you for your membership at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Lots of great guests that you hear every day. all day long on the Ideas Network. In this morning program alone, 15 hours and usually 15 guests, maybe even more than 15 mm-hmm. guests, who are really smart people, who have something to say, who are in some cases internationally renowned guests or nationally known guests, like Howard Kurtz, who we heard from in this hour, someone who writes for the Washington Post and has his own show on CNN. We will hear from Dave Obey coming up in our next hour. He is the longest-serving member of Wisconsin's congressional delegation ever and holds the very powerful post as chair of the Appropriations Committee. We will hear from Dave Obey in our next hour. We will hear from John Peavyhouse, who is a political analyst who's an expert on international affairs, a former UW-Madison professor who wrote a new book talking about war powers and Congress. So this is the type of quality guests that your pledge helps pay for, even though we don't pay our guests, the work in finding these guests. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine with Cheryl Gasser, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.